Joining me now at the San Diego Storytelling Festival is Encinitas resident Anthony. Anthony, welcome.
Thank you very much, Dave.
You were telling me a little bit about your family history being Belgian and a lot of stories coming out of World War II experiences, which, you know, that was an earth-shattering event for that culture.
Yeah. So my family has this really rich history of, involvement in World War II in a number of ways, both as part of the resistance and things that were happening back home. And I'm fortunate to know most of these stories because my grandfather, Henri Dupré, who's a Holocaust survivor, was the greatest storyteller that's ever lived. So when I was 15 years old, he took me, my mom, and my little sister on a road trip to a concentration camp in Germany. So he starts telling us his life story as we pull out of his driveway in Belgium. And so, you know, he's 19 and World War II is at its height. He wants to go and fight the Nazis, but he's young and his family's already doing a lot back home in Belgium. So his grandfather, my great-grandfather, his father forbids it. And his father was a very respected man of the community, high-ranking police officer, connections to the Belgian military. And so he had the pull to stop that from happening. But there was something about my grandfather where he felt something within his heart and within him, this pull, like he needed to do something. So one night he runs away from home and he goes and wants to join the French army, which, as you could probably imagine, you can't just walk into another country's, you know, into another country and just join their army. So he comes up with this plan to like figure out how am I going to get into the French army, you know, like I'm Belgian. And so he knows he needs to do something. He needs to prove himself. So he arrives in France and it's occupied at the time. So there's, you know, you can imagine the streets, there's German soldiers everywhere. And he follows these two Nazi officers around and waits until they go away. And then he breaks into their car, steals a briefcase because he thinks maybe this has some intelligence, some information that I can hand over to the French resistance and, you know, do something for the cause. And so he's getting away with it. He's about to board a train that's going to take him to the stop where he's going to hand over this briefcase and have his opportunity. And the very last person, the person checking people on the train, stop him. And it's not a German officer, it's a Frenchman who is a Nazi sympathizer, is working in cahoots. So he gets stopped by the Frenchman, and he asks, what's this briefcase? So my grandfather says, oh, you know, this is a briefcase I have. And so he asks him to open it. And, you know, it's locked, and my grandfather doesn't have a key. So they go back and forth a few times, and eventually the Frenchman calls over the Nazi officers. They recognize that this is their suitcase. And so, you know, at this point, they're about to kill him on the spot. Like, my grandfather is dead, practically dead at this point. But instead, they decide that they're going to ship him to a concentration camp in Germany. So my grandfather, you know, in the car telling us a story. He's sitting in the front seat. My mom is sitting in the passenger seat. My grandfather's driving. And my sister and I are in the back, and my mom's translating from French into English. So this whole story, we're 7 hours into it at this point, is being told through my mother, you know, to our family.
Is this the first time you've heard it at this point?
I had heard bits and pieces. You know, like my grandfather was a great storyteller, so, you know, I'd always heard bits and pieces, but I'd never gotten the whole thing. So we arrive at the concentration camp, and you know, for those who've never seen or been inside of a concentration camp, it's really big. There's about a dozen or so buildings all over the place. The ground almost looks like a desert, but it's not sand. It's just dirt and rocks. There's no plants or trees anywhere. It looks very drab. And there's 20-foot walls surrounding the entire concentration camp. You know, these are barbed wire fences. They're electrified fences. And there's sniper towers, you know, probably about every 100 yards. You know, they're everywhere. And so my sister, you know, hearing these stories growing up, she was much younger. She was 10 years old at the time. You know, she'd hear these stories growing up. She'd always tell my mom, you know, I would have run away. I would have escaped. And so we walked in that camp and she saw the reality of what my grandfather was facing. My mom asked, you know, would you have run away? And she's like, I can't, you know. And my sister was very young, so she was starting to realize the gravity and everything that had happened. And so my grandfather's, you know, about 74, 75 at this point, and he's walking very slowly, kind of hunched over. And we can see he enters different parts of the camps and it starts triggering different memories. Like different things are coming up for him. So he tells us about this time he's standing in a line of men. There's a man just, you know, a couple people next to him, and all of a sudden someone comes up and just shoots him in the back of the head. And, you know, for no reason. He tells us about another time, another man just runs and jumps on the electrified fence, just shocking himself to death. He takes us inside, and he shows us these large ovens, and he opens us up and says, you know, this is where the bodies were burned. This is where they burned the prisoners' bodies. We're walking, we get to the front of the camp, and there's this large gate that's wide open, big enough where you could fit a tank through it. And he looks at us and he puts his hand in the direction of the gate. And he tells us, this gate is open now. I can remember a time where this gate was closed and I couldn't get out. Now I'm free and I can leave whenever I want. Please don't close this gate. I don't know what I would do if this gate was closed. So we leave the concentration camp, and my grandfather was in there for about 9 months. Fortunately, this was towards the end of the war, so the war ended. He was liberated. But, you know, there were millions of prisoners. There was not really great logistics and, like, what to do with these prisoners afterwards. So if he wanted to get home, he had to walk. And if you can imagine, if you've seen some of the pictures, he's in this emaciated state. His ribs are sunken in. He's weak, he's sick, and day by day, he starts his track slowly to walk hundreds of miles back from Germany to Belgium. So he's telling us this story on our ride home, and he's telling us about the rest of his life and everything that he did after the war was over. And his life story ends about 20 hours into it, as we pull into the driveway at his home in Belgium. So we can talk about gifts that you've received in your life. This was the greatest gift that I ever could have imagined receiving from anyone. The gift of being able to receive and hear someone's story and for him not to apologize about it or cover anything up, for us to tell us the truth of what had happened. So after the war, my grandfather, one of the big things that irked him or bothered him was he always tried to be officially recognized by the state as being a prisoner of war. Now, because of his story, he never joined a military, and there's certain classifications of the Geneva Conventions that define what a prisoner of war is. And you know, what he did was brave, and he did have the intention to join, and he did act in a way for the resistance, but he was never accepted as a prisoner of war. So it's about 7 or so years later, I'm getting ready to graduate college, and my grandfather falls ill. So my mother flies to Belgium to be by his side, and I stay back to graduate and walk across the stage and do that whole thing. I was the first person in my family to ever graduate college, so yeah. And so by the time my mother gets there, my grandfather's fallen into a coma. And so she's there sitting by his bedside, and she finds this letter addressed to the King of Belgium. And this letter is a request to be recognized as a prisoner of war. And so she's reading it, and the letter stops mid-sentence. My grandfather never woke up from that coma. He died before he had the chance to send his letter. And as of today, he's not recognized as a prisoner of war. But he was a prisoner, and he survived, and he had the courage to go back into the camps just so he could share his life with us, just so he could share his story, show his experience. And he may not be recognized by the state as a prisoner of war, but he is my hero. And he's a hero to his family, and he's a hero to any single person who's ever heard his story. So, for my grandfather, Henri Dupré, who is the greatest storyteller ever, he's no longer with us, but his story will live on forever.
How has that changed you as a person? Who were you before that, and who are you now?
You know, I grew up in, my mother came to the U.S. We lived in Louisiana and always had, you know, working class jobs, and most of the people who are around me that in my sphere lived very normal lives. They didn't do anything really heroic. So hearing these stories growing up from my grandfather and my family members, you know, after the war ended, and they were in a position where they had to do these things. There was a war that was happening on their soil. It was around them. And they had to do something. But after the war ended, they all went on to live pretty normal lives.
And probably didn't discuss it much.
They told their story, but it wasn't like they were, you know, it wasn't like they were looking for anything. You know, it wasn't like they were living, you know. They just went on to live their lives. You know, my grandfather ran businesses. He had a farm. He owned a bar. And so for me, what that did, hearing that growing up, I just had a different context for my life and for what was possible and what a single human could do. And so I've taken that and I've built businesses with it. I've performed on stages with it. I've, you know, had some of my work reviewed by the New York Times and have had a number of accomplishments in my life. But it was this sense of, you know, if there's something bad that's happening in the world, you can't wait for someone else to be a leader. It has to be you.
All right. Great thought to end on.
Thank you, Dave.